And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. A number of signings that the Giants announced yesterday. We're going to go over all of them. We're going to get your reaction, and we'll discuss how that could very well impact draft strategy as we inch closer to the 2018 draft. So, Paul, let's start with the massive amount of signings that the Giants announced yesterday.
Okay.
They added first a wide receiver slash special teamer, and that is Cody Latimer, who spent his first four seasons in the league with the Denver Broncos. He is now reunited with new Giants wide receivers coach, who served as his wide receivers coach in Denver, so there's that coaching connection there as well. Now, Latimer doesn't have a great deal of receptions over the course of his career, but you figure he'll compete to be maybe that fourth wide receiver, and it can't be dismissed that he also has returned kicks during the course of his career.
Well, he's a tall guy who's got range and terrific hands, a basketball background, good special teams guy. Also, a very good run blocker for a wide receiver off the edge and downfield. That's one of the things that John Elway really liked about him when he was in Denver. I did a little research with people in Denver who said they really thought the Broncos were going to bring him back. They did not expect him to get away. In fact, he performed when he got in there during the second half of last season. Apparently, he graded out very well for them. Even though the stats were not very gaudy, he was productive. And they were very, very happy to have him, at least the people in Denver. Good signing for the Giants. To me, I wonder if he can be the second coming of a Dominic Hixon, a tall receiver who has special teams qualities, who, if you remember, Hixon spent almost 2 years in Denver and didn't have much in the way of stats. But then when he came to the Giants after Denver got rid of him, all of a sudden, not only was he a good special teams player, but they called upon him to be a productive wide receiver as well. And Hixon, before he had gotten hurt, when he was at Akron, it was my understanding that there were those who thought he was a second-round value. Well, it just so happens that Latimer was a second-round pick of the Broncos.
Yeah.
So I see many similarities here. I can only hope that Latimer can be as effective as a receiver for the Giants as Hixon was. I simply throw that out there because I've already had people on Twitter saying, well, where are the stats? You know, I don't see stats.
Well, sometimes it's about opportunity.
It's about opportunity.
That's what it comes out
to. It's about guys in front of you. It's about having a quarterback, you know, look for you and throw you the ball and give you chances. It's about a lot of different things. I think the Giants are hoping they have the second coming of a Dominic Hixon.
I think, though, the key is if you're going to be that fourth or that fifth wide receiver, Paul, you have to have special teams experience. It's
and he
an
does.
Absolute must. And he has that. And that, to me, is much more important to take into consideration than perhaps how many receptions he's going to catch. Because, listen, you need depth, and that proved that it was a necessity this past season because of all the injuries that occurred with the receiving corps. But in an ideal world, if you're pretty much set at your three, your fourth guy, he gives you production as a receiver. To me, that's icing on the cake.
Well, I disagree with that, if only because if you look at the Giants' lock receivers right now, you know that Beckham is a lock. You know that Shepard's a lock. There's no one else on this team who's a lock because Dwayne Harris and Brandon Marshall both are coming off of injuries. And you don't even know for sure if they're going to be on this team. Okay? We don't.
I mean, they're both under contract. But, yes,
yeah,
decisions
but
can
they're
still
coming
be
off of injuries. Of course, and we don't even know how they're – I don't know for sure that their rehab went well and that they're green-lighted to go. I don't know the answer to that. We haven't seen them. So those guys' futures are uncertain. So that means you're saying, well, you've got Tavares King. You've got
Lewis.
You've got Rudolph. Corey Latimer, in my mind, has more upside, or at least certainly when he came out of school, if not proving it with the Broncos, he had a better college resume coming out than any of those guys did. I think it you'd be hard-pressed to say, especially because Latimer does have good hands, that we do know. You'd be hard-pressed to say that right now, if you remove Harris and Marshall from the equation, he's the number three receiver. Or at least the door is open. The door is open for him to be the number three guy, short of the Giants grabbing somebody in the draft, which, believe me, folks, they're going to draft a receiver at some point. I'm pretty sure.
And I think there's depth in the draft that if you want to wait till the middle rounds, I think you can wind up with somebody. I don't think that's a stretch. But, I mean, listen, Tavares King went to Georgia, Paul. I mean, that's no slouch of a school where he was a productive collegiate athlete there. And, I mean, Roger Lewis didn't necessarily go to a powerhouse, but I still think that you got to take into consideration some of those guys who have been in the system, who are a little bit more polished and had more experience. I wouldn't dismiss them from maybe being in the mix for that third wide receiver spot.
I still think that based on what we've seen from them and when they had chances to really step up and produce, I don't think they produced at the level that the Giants needed. For that reason, I think they're deeper on the chart and certainly involved in a very hot competition if they're going to make the five receivers or even six receivers that the Giants are going to have in September.
Well, the Giants address other positions in addition to wide receiver. The next guy on the list is cornerback B.W. Webb, who did not play any games last season,
right.
Paul. Had not played a regular season game since 2016. He was briefly with the Cleveland Browns for a game or two, but he was never active. So, like Teddy Williams, who was the corner they picked up from Carolina, they also have been out of football for a year, but this is somebody that, once again, will be in the mix to compete for a position on the depth chart.
Coach him up. It's that simple. These are guys who don't have an extensive, accomplished NFL resume, who you're bringing in because you believe that they've got skills that you can polish up and do something with. Williams, in particular, is an incredible speed burner.
Well, he's a track star in college.
He's
he
a
didn't
blur.
Even play football.
He's a blur. And so, you know, you figure, okay, he can help you on special teams. That you kind of start with. And then you
better
say,
help you on special teams
if
he's going to make the team.
And then you say, okay, can we do things technique-wise to help this guy be a productive NFL player, even if he's the fifth cornerback on your roster? And that's what you do. You take a shot. And you see what happens.
And Webb is a journeyman. He's been with a number of different teams since he was brought into the league with the Dallas Cowboys. So experience is key when you're talking about the depth chart. The third addition is Josh Morrow from the Arizona Cardinals, defensive lineman who has a connection to James Betcher, just like Kareem Martin, the linebacker that they signed last week. And this is somebody that is going to also be in the mix at that defensive end rotational position. Because what have we talked about, Paul, the last few years? How JPP and Vernon have played so many snaps.
Yes.
So now, with Kerry Wynn, by the way, also being formally re-signed, you've got Wynn, you've got Morrow, you've got Okwara. You have options now that you can hopefully continue to develop so that you don't have to utilize Vernon and JPP every single down.
You also have Kareem Martin, who at 6'6".
Who's that hybrid type of player.
At 6'6", 270 is that hybrid. And again, make no mistake, folks, the Giants are going to run this 3-4 hybrid. They're not going to be constantly in one particular form or shape or whatever scheme, whatever you want to call it, because it's always going to revolve. It's going to be fluid. So for me, when I look at the re-signing of Kerry Wynn, he's a run-first defender, okay? Martin is a run-first defender. Morrow, run-first defender.
He only has one sack in his career,
okay?
So we're not
talking about you're telling me, and all three of these guys are like, you know, tall, big,
similar
large
profile.
Frames,
yes.
Weight, you know, these guys are not your tweeners that you see in your typical 3-4 defense. Okay, that's what I love about what Betcher is doing here. Okay, despite that he's supposed to be a base 3-4, he's not filling up his roster. He's not asking the Giants to go get me a bunch of tweeners, which what happens with most 3-4 defenses. The guys on the edges are tweeners. They're 250 pounds. Okay. You know, I can't stand those guys.
Yeah, you want the meat and potatoes.
Okay? I want that 270-pound defensive end. Now, what Betcher does is he gets the guy who's 260, 265, 270, 275. He'll have him stand up. He'll have him play stand-up defensive end and call him a linebacker. Okay? Betcher's not interested in the tweeners. Okay? That's not the deal here. So what the Giants have done, by re-signing Wynn and signing Martin and signing Morrow, these are three run-first stopping defenders who are going to be somewhere on that front line, okay, specifically on the edge, on one or two of the edges. They can take the obvious run-stopping downs away from JPP and Vernon so that you can limit those guys' snaps, get them in on obvious passing situations, and then go after that quarterback. So I think that these very small, under-the-radar, non-sexy signings have helped the Giants in two ways. You will help the run defense, because that's what these guys primarily do, and you will help the pass rush, because JPP and Vernon will have reduced snap counts and have more efficiency in their snaps on the field. That's how I see it.
No, I agree with you. The only thing I will add is, you know, JPP and Vernon are also effective in stopping the run, too.
They are,
but you don't want to necessarily lose them on run plays.
We've seen those guys get worn down, and when they're worn down and they're beaten up, everything about their game gets affected across the board. They don't stop the run as well as they're supposed to, and they don't get after the quarterback as well as they're supposed to because they're tired and they're beaten up. That's not going to happen with the guys that the Giants have put on the roster.
Morrow's out of Stanford. He was undrafted, but certainly progressively increased his reps with the Arizona Cardinals over the last few seasons. So another young guy entering the prime of his career who obviously has familiarity with the system. We should also mention you got Avery Moss still on the roster, too, who's in the mix, too, at that position as well. So that's somebody, obviously, to take note of. And as we mentioned, Kerry Wynn, it was formally announced that he was re-signed. So a number of transactions that the Giants made on top of, obviously, beefing up the offensive line with Nate Solder and Patrick Omame. And we are going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Anything you want to weigh in terms of free agency as well as the upcoming draft, we are all ears. We start with Brian in New York. Brian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I would just like to make a statement and temper some of these fans' enthusiasm about Saquon Barkley. I just think of all the running backs that have come out, like most notably, like Reggie Bush. He was supposed to set the NFL on fire his rookie year, and he just seemed like he had all this upside, and he was already in Canton before he even played a snap. And he came out, he didn't even really know how to run between the tackles. And he was more of a one-dimensional player.
Well, he also couldn't stay healthy, too. I mean, that's what really held Reggie Bush back. He struggled to suit up for all 16 games. I agree with you. There was a lot of hype surrounding him. Heisman Trophy winner coming from a big school in USC. You know, similar traits to Saquon Barkley, no doubt about it. But I think if you're looking back as to why he didn't pan out, not necessarily his running style, it was the fact that he couldn't stay healthy, couldn't stay on the football field.
Well, I'm just... I just don't see how he could possibly live up to all the hype that he's been given. You know what I mean? And I think our best bet would be to go with Quentin Nelson, just because with the offensive line, it's like you have five guys. It's a team within a team where they're all out there at the same time. And eventually you're going to take Saquon out. And I think a running back takes more punishment than offensive lineman does.
I think two things you have to keep in mind. First of all, Barkley may go to the Cleveland at one, so you may not have a chance to get Barkley. And then second of all, Reggie Bush was giving up 30 pounds to Barkley. Bush was barely 200 pounds, and Barkley's 233. Last time I checked the combine numbers. So you're talking about a different physical specimen. They're not nearly in the same class.
That's true. I didn't put that in the account. Just one more thing. If you were going to choose one of these quarterbacks, which one would it be? I mean, me personally, I'd like to see Rosen because, I mean, I don't want to hear none of this. You know, he doesn't need the game. He doesn't like the game. You know, the kid's cocky. I like to see that out of my quarterback. You know, he knows what he's doing. He looks a little bit like Aaron Rodgers to me. His only downfall to me is, like, he'd be a bit delicate. Like, if you don't protect him, he gets hit the right way, he's out for the rest of the season.
Well, because of the injury history and the concussions.
Yeah,
that's always a risk. No doubt about it.
I mean, the whole thing with... he's not a good character guy. I mean, they're just nitpicking now. I see a quarterback, he's already done. He knows what he's doing. And I just like the cockiness. I like the brassness. He's got all the tools. Well, who would you guys take at quarterback is what I'm wondering.
Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, appreciate the phone call, Brian. Thanks for weighing in.
First of all, if I'm with Team X, Because if I'm the Giants, I'm not taking a quarterback, okay? Can I say that for the 50
I think you made that
time?
Clear, yes.
Okay.
well, yes, just an imaginary world, a random team. You have to take a quarterback.
If
who
I'm
you
team blank
yes,
and I have my pick of these quarterbacks, I'm taking Josh Allen. I love the guy's arm. I love his mobility. I love the opportunity to make every single throw on the field from a moving pocket, which not every guy can do. I like his toughness. I like his leadership skills. I like the fact that he has overcome adversity and even brought a team back from the depths of nothing to be competitive, which was one of the questions, by the way, that was asked of Darnold? I think that was a question that was asked of him at the combine, and it really bothered me. His answer was a bad answer. He was asked, you realize that if you're picked at the top of the draft, you're going to be forced to help rebuild a team as the franchise player on that team. How do you think you would go about doing that? And Darnold did not at all impress me in his media interview, and his answer was particularly troubling to me. He said, well, I don't know. You don't know? You're going to be quarterback. You're going to be facing a franchise. You don't have in your mind an idea of what you want to do. You've got to take the bull by the horns, pal. Grab this thing by the throat. You better know, because everyone in that city, wherever you're drafted, they're going to demand that of you. I don't know is not an acceptable answer. And so, I don't know. I never had to do that with a team before. Okay, guess what? That's not good. That's now another big question mark. What does he do in the face of adversity, and what does he do when he's asked to turn things around for a team, because they're all going to be pointing to him as the quarterback to be the guy to lead them to the promised land, to lead them to the light at the end of the tunnel. And Darnold stands there at the podium and he says, I don't know. To me, bad intangible. So
I'm not one to overanalyze what players say at press conferences. I'm not dismissing what you're saying. It's just I think sometimes way too much is made out of that, and I think some of these kids are also told that be careful what you say to all of these questions, whether they're harmless or harmful, because they're going to be overanalyzed. So, you know, I don't know truly what he was thinking through his mind. That's why I'm not making too much of it. And, I mean, I've said it on this show, just like you have been behind the fact that you wouldn't take a quarterback to begin with. But, I mean, I've said if I'm going to take a quarterback, I'd wait for Baker Mayfield, because I feel – he has a lot of upside. Just like the first caller said, I'm not turned off by what appears to be the ego and what appears to be maybe turning off people because of his attitude. I actually like that. I mean, to me, it's about what you do on the football field. It's the production. It's not all of the other antics that I think a lot of people make too much about. And I think people are criticizing Baker Mayfield for his arm strength. I've seen him throw 50 to 60 yards down the field, hit guys in stride. I don't think that's a shortcoming. I understand he lacks the size. And in an ideal world, if he was 6'2 or 6'3, he probably would be in the conversation for the number one overall pick. But since he's not, that's why a guy like Sam Darnold and Josh Allen are put in front of him. But, I mean, to me, if I had the choice in an ideal world, I would take Mayfield. The other thing I was going to add about Allen was that you were referring to, what people forget is before he even went to Wyoming, Paul, I mean, he was a junior college player that nobody was even looking at. And
correct.
He had to aggressively campaign for himself. So he's had that hunger. I'm completely with you.
He has shown that he can climb that mountain.
Yes, there's no
doubt
about
that. And that's a big deal for me. That's an intangible.
No, and it's something that shouldn't be dismissed. You got to take that into consideration. But I find what players say, if I'm an executive, Paul, I'm getting more out of sitting down in a meeting face-to-face without the media and the cameras around.
Understood.
And spending a day with the quarterback much more
than a band
of reporters in front of him and him
but
trying
to
satisfy
But here's the problem.
Everybody.
We're asked a question, so we can only go by our first-hand experience.
Yeah. That's the only sample size. Yeah.
Right. I've never met this guy other than that 15-minute press briefing he gave at the Combine. And I was no more than 3 feet from him, and I was very unimpressed with him. I thought Rosen was very over-polished, too rehearsed, if you will.
That's interesting. Okay.
Came off to me
scripted, basically. Okay.
And that didn't sit very well with me. Mayfield, he came across as more of a street dude.
Well, and he does that to most people.
And,
so I don't think your opinion is any different.
That didn't make me feel very good. All right. It was like, okay, wait till you get a hold of the NFL. Or should I say the NFL gets a hold of you? And wait till some 275-pound lineman slams you to the ground. I don't think that attitude's going to be quite as sharp as it is right now, little guy. Didn't feel real good about him either. Josh Allen, on the other hand, aced his entire media session. 5 stars. He was sensational in every way, which didn't surprise me. Because, again, of what we're talking about, of what he had shown and what he had done in his college career. So I loved his intangibles. I love his skill set. Josh Allen would be my guy. And I get the accuracy thing. I get that. I get that Wyoming did not play the greatest of competition. I understand all of that. But as Jim Zorn explained to us on this show, one of the biggest adjustments you have to make in the NFL – besides reading defenses and having the poise and the understanding of what to do, all right, and especially quickly with your processing, is your command of the huddle. He said, and you were on the show, weren't you, with Jim Zorn?
Definitely, I was, yeah, I remember that.
He said one of the things that he wanted to make sure he taught Davis Webb was you make sure that when you go in that huddle, guys can look you in the eye and believe you. They can follow you. They know you have confidence and conviction in the call. And that you're going to go out there and you're going to be their leader. And they want to follow you. You've got to get them to want to follow you. Josh Allen does that when you talk to him. I didn't get that from the other three guys. And that's an intangible that whether or not you tell me you can get it in front of a bunch of people or you have to sit in a room individually with a team and go through that interview process, I don't know. I'm simply telling you, my first-hand experience with those four quarterbacks, and I was just a few feet from each one of them, listened to 15 minutes of them. Josh Allen had it. The other three guys did not.
I'm not criticizing Josh Allen for going to Wyoming because, first of all, Carson Wentz came out of North Dakota State, and he's turned out to be okay thus far, and Joe Flacco went to Delaware, and that also is not necessarily a powerhouse school.
Well, and again, may I add,
yeah,
I had Carson Wentz at the top of my list 2 years ago. I was a big Carson Wentz fan. I thought he was the best quarterback coming out. I had a Goff. So far, so good, right?
To me, it's the decision-making, the intangibles, the arm strength, much more so than the
It's always going to be the skill set and the performance on the field.
Like,
the tape is always going to be predominantly your decision-maker. But if you're just going to grade the intangibles, my personal experience was Josh Allen blew it out of the water. But that's that much of the grading.
Yeah, well, and also when it comes to the court of public opinion, if you are stuck on a quarterback that you love, the convenient excuse to shy away from a guy like Allen is, well, he only went to Wyoming. And that may have nothing to do with his skill set as a quarterback.
And his completion
percentage.
It's out of
convenience, correct. No, but if you want to talk about his accuracy, that's fair. You can talk about his accuracy.
Sure you can.
Because that, to me, is a fair evaluation. The school he went to, I don't really think that's going to be the end-all, be-all. Let's head back to the Lions. Matt is in Rhode Island. Matt, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi, Matt.
It's actually funny listening to the generational gap between you guys, where one guy is caring too much about the off-field stuff, and one guy's almost completely dismissing it. Is that's not what I'm calling.
Well, I'm not dismissing it. Listen, you got to look into the character of a player, but I think too much is made out of if a player makes a bad decision or two during the course of his career, who's to say that that's going to define the individual moving forward? And Philip Rivers, for example, who's been in the NFL just as long as Eli Manning, he's a guy that screams and yells at the opposition. He's gotten in the face of other individuals, and I don't hear anybody saying that Philip Rivers shouldn't be a starting quarterback for the Chargers anymore.
I think we need to reboot for just a minute.
Yeah.
Folks, let's understand something. It's the skill set and it's the game tape that matters overwhelmingly more than any 15-minute press conference or any 5-minute interview that anybody gives, okay? But I'm simply stating, based on that little sample size, there was clearly a winner in the quarterback interviews at the combine. But that means a speck. When you're doing your reporting and your grading and your scouting on these guys, it just so happens for me, Josh Allen won the combine interviews. He also happened to be going into the combine my favorite quarterback. It just happened to mesh that way. If it didn't, it didn't,
yeah.
But it happened to. Let's make that clear.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of tend, I'm closer to Lance's age, but I kind of tend to lean a little towards more Paul's idea, especially for the quarterback. I got to make sure that it's a good front man for my organization. But the real reason I'm calling is I'm going through some anguish right now where every other day I change my mind as to what the Giants should do it too. Like one day I'm afraid that if they pass on a quarterback, then if they're not going to have one for another long time, and I live through those Dave Brown years and I don't want to go through it. And then the next day I'm afraid that they're going to draft one and he's going to stink. And it's like I just want the draft to get here already because this is driving me crazy.
Hallelujah! Yeah. Let's get it over with.
I think we're all with you. If the draft was tomorrow, I don't think any of us would complain.
Insanity.
Yeah.
It's really, if you really break this down, it's, you know, from a GM perspective coming in, it sounds great, right? You have the number two pick, you know, you have, you know, the expectations are low for the team. But, my God, I do not envy the decision that Gettleman makes because he could trade down, accumulate picks, get good players, and still lose the trade. That's what can wind up happening to him here. It's a really difficult decision that is going to determine the future of this franchise, really, here, in one way or the other.
How do you define losing the trade? Before you go any further, how do you define losing the trade?
Simple. Now, Paul, maybe it may not be the truth, but the perception of the public will be he lost. If he trades that pick and he trades away a top five quarterback, even if he gets four Pro Bowlers at other positions, if in 4 or 5 years the Giants don't have a quarterback, he's going to be looked at as the loser of that trade.
All right, let me ask you a question, and this is a valid argument, and that's why I don't know that there's a right or wrong answer. Do the Chargers think they lost the trade with the Giants for Eli Manning? When they wound up with Phillip Rivers, they got Merriman in the deal, they got Kading in the deal. You know, they got a bunch of Pro Bowls out of that and potentially a Hall of Fame quarterback.
They don't look like the losers. They don't think they're losers because a lot
they
of
shouldn't.
You can't put the Super Bowls on one individual player.
Okay.
So I don't think anybody – there's a lot of people that would argue that Phillip Rivers has been a better quarterback than Eli over the course of his career.
Okay, so that's the question. So some people might think the Chargers lost on that deal because the Giants got a two-time Super Bowl MVP, and Eli was a main component to getting them there. Other people are going to say the Giants lost because look at the Chargers. They got a guy who's probably a Hall of Fame quarterback and a ton of Pro Bowls. So who actually won that trade, or did both teams win? And that's why I ask you, lose the trade, because should it matter to Dave Gettleman if he trades the number two? Should it matter if that guy who is taken by the other team goes to the Hall of Fame or not? If he drafts 3 or 4 guys with those picks and the Giants win a Super Bowl, should that matter?
Well, that's why the team goal, result has to be taken into consideration.
Of course, the Super Bowl would cure everything, but you know, there's no doubt that the quarterback position is the most important thing in the sport. It's the most important position in sports. It's not going to look good for him if he passes on a Hall of Fame quarterback and the Giants do not get one. It will not look good for him.
Well,
no
Matt,
but
here's the other thing.
I got to grab a phone call here. I'll listen to you guys when I hang up. Do not discount the fact, and you're going to say this is petty. Do not discount the fact that the Jets now are in prime position to take a quarterback. The Giants are not going to want them having one, and us not having one in a few years.
Yeah, so, but you can't think like that as an executive and appreciate the phone call. You can't worry about what another team will get.
It's
you
irrelevant.
You love the player or
it's
you don't
irrelevant.
Love the player. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's idiotic.
It's irrelevant.
I don't even think or care about what they're planning to do at 3.
GMs have enough of trouble trying to pick the guy that they want to get, as opposed to worrying about somebody else behind them.
Well, that's
seriously.
And that's a spiteful move. That would be like, I don't want this team to have this player, so I'm going to take this player even though I may not love the player. Come on. I mean, you can't explain that rationale. What I wanted to say was, and it's alluding to somewhat of what you brought up, Paul, is the fact that when you have a trade, if the quarterback, let's say, that the Giants didn't take at number two turns out to be a Hall of Famer, to the last caller's point, the team that a quarterback goes to, and maybe you disagree, to me, plays a big role in helping shape that quarterback.
Of course it does.
So my point is, if a quarterback goes to a team that trades with the Giants, you have to then look at, well, what were the other factors around the quarterback as to why that quarterback panned out? If I take that quarterback, I move him to another team, not necessarily the Giants. Are we guaranteed to have the same path career-wise? For example,
well,
I mean, I
still believe David Carr's career was ruined by Houston.
Well, that's a great example.
I still believe that.
That's a tremendous example, because if he had an offensive line, nobody's saying he's going to the Hall of Fame, but his confidence improves. And who knows where his numbers go or the opportunities he gets even after Houston to become a legitimate starter and have a legitimate chance. So it's not so simple when you analyze how NFL players pan out. You can't just look at the player on an island. You have to look at, well, what was around the player and what helped the player succeed.
Yeah.
That has to be taken into consideration.
I have no argument with that. And, and conversely, there's also nothing wrong with saying both teams got what they wanted to get out of the deal. The Chargers got a bunch of Pro Bowls and some really good players out of the deal. The Giants got the one guy they felt they had to have, and Ernie, of course, he felt was going to get them a championship, and he got what he wanted out of the deal. I mean, sometimes both teams do okay. Both teams win. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think the Giants care if they trade the number 2 pick what happens with the other team. As long as they get what they want,
they want a
benefit does it
out
matter
of it.
Yeah, if the other team gets something good?
And if they trade it down and that group of players help them consistently get to the playoffs and win games, even if there's not a Super Bowl involved, I mean, that's still a success. Because the point is, you want to be in competition to be in the mix to get to the playoffs. I used on yesterday's show, Paul, the trade that I brought up, and you have to look at it from every angle, is the RG3 trade. Between the Redskins and the Rams. And I'm not bringing it up to look at what happened with the Redskins. I'm talking about the Rams' perspective.
Rams did great.
Well, see, that I think is debatable, Paul, because the Rams were in the number 2 spot. The Rams moved down. They didn't move down immensely. They moved down a few spots. They got 8 total picks.
Yeah.
And they didn't get 8 just from the Redskins. They turned that into
other
picks, okay?
Correct.
Of those 8 players, one player, Paul, is currently on the Rams.
That's true.
2 of them are on the Giants. Productive players. I'm not downgrading the players, but I'm looking at it from a team perspective, which you're pointing to. Since 2012, when they made the trade, Paul, the Rams didn't have a winning record or make the playoffs until 2017, which is beyond the lifespan of all of the players they wound up in that trade, with the exception of Michael Brockers.
See,
that to me is not a win.
And you know what? I can understand that perspective. I don't disagree with your logic, and you could sell that to me. My comment was, RG3 was never going to last long in the NFL with the style of play that he was running anyway. So in my mind, whatever they got was a win, because RG3, the RG3 that we knew, within 2 years he was shot.
Okay,
and
but, I guess,
how does that help you?
Well, but see, you're looking at it through the lens more of what happened with a player on a different team as opposed to just the Rams. And who's to say?
And again, it's a prism.
Correct.
What angle do you look at it from? Put it this way. I think what you could say in that trade, if you really want to be fair about it, neither team got what they expected to get.
Yeah, I don't really think it was a win-win.
How about they both lost?
Yeah, I think that certainly you could go lose-lose or you know, below expectations, certainly, in terms of what they got out of that deal. No doubt about it. Let's head back to the phone lines. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with your Tuesday's edition, Big Blue Kickoff Live, going over the latest Giants free agent signings, how that shapes draft strategy. Pete is on Staten Island. Pete, what's happening?
How you doing, guys? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Pete. What do you got for us?
Well, Paul actually spoke to my point about Corey Latimer. I didn't know a lot about him. But Paul, you're basically saying he's more or less the Dominic Hixon type, in your opinion, or perhaps?
I think there is certainly a parallel that you could draw there. Let's put it that way. I'm not saying he's Dominic Hixon, but there are parallels if he is able to give the Giants what you think he is capable of giving them.
Right, and so in that case, okay, and this is only going by a small sample size of what we saw with Brandon Marshall last year. I happen to believe, and I don't know if you'll agree with me on it or not, I do think that the Giants are going to cut Brandon, and which is going to free up at least, I think it's $5.2 million towards the cap. And my question is, and I have a defensive question also, my question is, if in fact they do that, who's left in free agency as far as wideouts, okay, who would be a number 3, because we have Sterling and OBJ, Who would be number three? And is there anybody in the draft that, let's say, I don't know, maybe third round, fourth round, I would think, where they could pick them up. The second thing is on defense, where do you think JPP fits in this sort of defense that Belts is going to run? From what I've been reading and everything else and listening to, it seems like he might be the player that doesn't fit the system. Do you agree with that? Am I hearing it wrong or reading it wrong? What do you think?
Which one do you want?
Oh, you can start with JPP, and then we can discuss the wide receivers.
For
if you
me,
want.
JPP, I still think he's more of your traditional defensive end, and Vernon is more of your stand-up guy. But that does not mean JPP won't do some stand-up duties, because we have seen him on occasion run a stand-up drill, if you will, during games with this team. But I see Vernon as more of the stand-up guy in Betcher's scheme.
And Vernon has had experience even under Spags in terms of dropping back a little. So I don't think that's an issue. JPP, we've seen drop back too, but I would agree with you. I think Vernon deserves the edge in terms of being a little bit more effective consistently in that department.
Okay. And, you know, I hope you answer my wideout question.
Yeah, sure. We'll address that.
My last question, if you don't mind, if the Giants were to move back to number five, with Denver, okay, and I'm a little bit surprised that Denver, you know, because of the fact that they signed Case Keenum, and I actually happen to think Keenum's an okay quarterback, I really do, but if we move back to number five, and by the way, Paul, I'm with you on this quarterback thing, because, listen, there's no Elways here, we know there's no Peytons here. I don't even think there's an Eli, Big Ben, or Rivers here.
I don't think so either.
In this class. So if that's the case, and we have Webb, okay, if they believe Webb is in the class of what is out there today, okay, if they're comparing him to them, then why go there? It doesn't make sense, right? So if they move back to five, would you agree with me that Nelson has to be the guy at five?
Why? I got a better question for you. Try to make an argument for me that he would not be the guy. How about that?
I actually can't make the argument.
I don't think you can.
Because between two, you know, the thing is, like Edelman says, if you're picking a two, you want to make sure that hopefully the guy at some point wears a gold jacket, right?
Well, unless Barkley falls to that.
What's the difference between two and five?
And then let me ask you something.
About the same thing. You know what I mean?
Here's the dilemma, and this is something I've been wrestling with now for days, because I've been trying to get it in my head that Barkley could go to the Browns at one, and that the Giants don't get the price that they want. They're going to sit at two, and they're going to make the pick. Now, it will then, in all likelihood, be either Chubb or Nelson, okay?
Well,
now,
I hope it's not Chubb, to be honest with you.
Football 101 says if you're in that particular position with the type of options the Giants have, you must pick the most dominant front seven player available, specifically the edge pass rusher. So Football 101 says you take Chubb. Now, on the other side of the coin, if you listen to Dave Gettleman, and he says, the guy we pick at number two, you better see him wearing a gold jacket. I'm going to tell you, I think, based on everything that I heard at the Combine and other people around the league I've talked to, I think if you said to them, put $100 on the table right now and tell me between Nelson and Chubb, which guy has a better chance of becoming a Pro Football Hall of Famer, I think Nelson would hands down win that bet.
I agree with you.
So now, what do you do?
I'm not a scout. I'm certainly not a scout, okay? I did play a lot of football in my day. And I watched a number of Nelson's games. And he is an absolute role grader. And he's a finisher. And he can pass block. He's more of a role grader than a pass blocker, but he is the total package.
Okay, so what do you do then? Do you look at the visions of the goal?
Nelson.
The gold jacket vision says take Nelson.
Because
and the conventional wisdom says take Chubb, though. It's not easy.
I'm not saying Chubb is a bad player by any means, but I think Chubb is the best player of a mediocre group this year.
You're right.
That's what I think.
You're right.
I think Chubb is separating himself from the pack.
He has separated himself, but as was explained to me by some veteran personnel people, if there were other superstar defensive ends in this draft, Chubb would not be at the top of the list.
Well, if you're comparing him to other classes, but I could say the same thing. If I compare Nelson to other classes of guards, I'm probably not necessarily going to
put
Nelson.
No, you would.
I'm not going to put him first necessarily.
You're going to put
list.
Him right up with the elite group. He's that good. He's that good.
That, to me, may be a bit of a stretch.
That's
as well.
The problem. I mean, He's that good.
Especially if we're going back into the history of the NFL and all the draft
We're talking
classes.
The last 10 years.
Well, I don't know every guard that came off the top of my head, you but know. I guarantee you I'm not necessarily putting Nelson at the top
but
of the
But that's the problem, caller. That's the problem. You know, if you go with the gold jacket theory, Nelson's probably the better bet. If you go with the old school football theory, Chubb is probably the smarter bet. And I'm wrestling with this. I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to keep you guys so long. What do you think about the wideout scenario?
All right, we'll let you go and answer that.
We'll let you go, Pete. I mean, in terms of free agent wide receivers, there's still a number of guys on the market. But, you know, remember, just because the Giants may have some financial flexibility if they choose to part ways with a player doesn't mean that they're going to have the urgency to immediately sign a free agent wide receiver, because
right.
What happens more often than not, Paul, is if you decide to part ways with a veteran wide receiver, you're more likely to maybe see if you could get somebody in the draft, and then as you get closer to training camp, then maybe you bring in a veteran who is still out there on the market.
Sure.
For example, like what happened with Leon Hall. I know he's a different position, but Leon Hall was brought in right before training camp because he was still out there, and you didn't...
Oh, James Jones was the guy,
James
too.
Jones, who didn't wind point. Up making the roster, but yes, that would be another example, too. I mean, there's plenty of veterans. I'm still looking at the guys that are on the market. Alan Hearns was just let go from Jacksonville, but, I mean, he's much younger.
Decker's out there.
Decker is one that comes to mind. Jeremy Maclin is a little bit younger than Decker. He's another one out there. Mike Wallace. But, you know, they're different. Mike Wallace is a vertical threat. Maclin is more of a possession wide receiver. Mm-hmm. When you look at Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard, you know, you're looking at guys that could play on the outside, guys that could play in the slot. I mean, what are you more interested in? If you're looking for that third wide receiver, are you looking for solely a vertical, down-the-field type of guy, Paul?
What style of guy do you want?
I mean, I don't know what they're right. envisioning. You know,
right.
That's why I would think that if the Giants truly want options, I think the draft would be the way to go before you all of a sudden spend your valuable resources on that position.
I would agree with that. I think if they're going to sign another veteran, it's going to come after the draft as you get into the summertime. A guy I would be taking a look at, Tre'Quan Smith, out of Central Florida, is a guy who I like in the fourth round for the Giants. I think he can last till the early fourth round, and he's a big guy. The measurables on him coming out of the combine were 6'2", 203, and his best 40 time was 4.4 flat. Okay? His accepted 40 time is 4.49. But again, very, very productive in school. He's a bit raw. He didn't play a lot early in his career. Only became Central Florida's leading pass receiver for 3 years, and has a tremendous ceiling. Early fourth round, you could absolutely see some team taking him and being very happy. And he's a 6'2 guy too, so he's not a smurf.
One other guy I'm just continuing to peruse free agency who just popped up, who's still out there, is Bryce Butler, 28 years old. He was with the Cowboys last season.
Sure.
He's more of that vertical threat, but he made plays. I mean, you could argue he was making plays more consistently than even Dez Bryant last season. So, you know, that's a guy that comes to mind. But what's interesting is, Paul, notice how there was an initial push for some of the household names, and now the market has slowed down, which tends to happen in NFL free agency as we get closer to the draft. So who's to say that maybe some of these guys are still available even on the opposite side of the draft, which then gives the Giants as well as other teams options if they don't feel they got their targeted weapons within the draft?
Well, here's the interesting part about this. As far as wide receivers go, it's a good year for tall receivers. Some years, they're all slot guys. They're 5'10", they're 5'11", and first three rounds is full of these Smurfs, as I like to call them. Well, not this year. This year, your top four rounds are full of guys 6 feet and up. And that's quite a different dynamic. As you're going looking for apples, oranges, or pears in your shopping cart, know that you can get 6 feet or up by the bushels in this draft. You know, if you're after the little small slot guy, which the Giants shouldn't be because they have Sterling Shepard, okay, if you're after a slot guy, you're not going to have as easy a time finding one of those guys because those little shorter, shiftier guys, this is not the draft for them.
Here's another thing to take into consideration with respect to the wide receiver position as we're talking in the wake of the Cody Latimer signing. If you go back to Minnesota, Paul, and, you know, this goes back to Pat Shurmur's philosophy. First of all, who knows how he's going to utilize Evan Engram, who you could say could very well be the third wide receiver, and then that opens the door perhaps for the usage of Rhett Ellison, who, by the way, was with Pat Shurmur towards the latter part of his Vikings career, Rhett Ellison I'm referring to. You know, maybe he says to himself, we've got enough right now, and if we add another young guy, we'll be content. Because if I go back to Minnesota last season, Paul, he had Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. He had two legitimate top wideouts. Mm-hmm. Kyle Rudolph was his third guy. Laquon Treadwell, who was a first-round pick 2 years ago, has barely seen the field since the Vikings took him in the draft. And they were okay. Now, that doesn't mean that you should say, well, what happened in Minnesota is automatically going to work here, but he utilized the tight ends. He may view Evan Engram as his third wide receiver, and they say to themselves, we don't have to go out on a spending spree to find that proven wide receiver. We'll utilize the tight ends. We'll utilize the draft. I can certainly see that coming to fruition. It would not surprise me. Let's head back to the phone lines. Christian is in New York. Christian, what's happening? Welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. I've been thinking about the receivers, too. And with Gettleman here, I don't think we're going to be highly prioritizing the receivers the way we have in the past. I think that they might try to get another receiver, but not use such a high resource on one. And I'm hoping that maybe DJ Chark will be in the third round for us because he's a bigger guy, too. And I've been watching him all year long, not just at the combine. All those LSU receivers really just kind of get hidden in their offense because of the quarterback play. But I really think they're going to use the high resources on the front seven and O-line and really just kind of consider the fact that pass catchers is already a strength for us, so they don't really need to.
Well, there's options there, Christian. I mean, I would not dismiss what happened last season when injuries did occur, and you can't predict injuries, and then obviously you had to rely on your depth chart. So I wouldn't just say it's automatically a strength. There's some question marks with guys returning from injury. It should be a priority to have as many options as possible. They don't have to be names and household names, but there should be options. I agree with you. If you go back to his track record in Carolina, Dave Gettleman, the trenches was where he put a lot of his resources in. And then when you look at the wide receiver position, you know, Kelvin Benjamin was a young guy that they brought in, and Dominic Hickson was there. You know, they had veterans who they brought in, and they found ways for them to be productive. I mean, Cam never really truly had, let's face it. I mean, outside of Steve Smith, who then was let go, he didn't necessarily have a bunch of notable names that you would be like, oh, in a fantasy draft, I must have this guy. But they turned a lot of these options into productive players. So he could very well be adopting a similar philosophy to round out the roster.
Yeah, and I also think that, I think that, you know, he's going to get another receiver, but it's just not going to be like within the top three rounds. And I think Bryce Butler would actually be a really valuable option just as, like, you know, an outside deep threat. But really, I don't see Brandon Marshall being on this team because Tavarius King really outplayed him when he actually got an opportunity once Marshall went down. So really just him, and then Shepard recovered just fine, it seems. And then Odell is really the one you have to hope will return to speed.
Well, clearly that's their hope that he gets back to full force. Shepard also remains healthy, too. Let's not forget about that. He was banged up for the majority of the season. I mean, listen, King had more opportunities than Marshall last season. It's hard to make much of anything out of Brandon Marshall. Yeah, but, I mean, we're talking about a small sample size of five games. He was targeted. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers right now. Brandon Marshall was targeted 33 times. He had 18 catches. I mean, that's not, let's face it. I mean, that's really not much of anything compared to what he's done in previous stints in his career. King stayed healthy and was on the field more, and King had 37 targets, four more than Marshall, and he had the same amount of receptions as Brandon Marshall. So from a production standpoint, if you're just going based on numbers, and that's not the only way to tell production, there's absolutely no difference between really the stats that both of those guys produced, and King was on the field for much more than Marshall.
Oh, King definitely had to have a lot more yards. I mean, he was making actual big plays.
He had less than 100 more yards than Brandon Marshall over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think what you have to understand is that the Giants wide receiving core as a whole last year significantly underperformed what they need if they're going to get back into a playoff conversation. I think that's the bottom line. And no matter what name you want to throw up against the wall, they've got to get better. Case closed. I mean, they just need more production.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really, you know, just odd year, just the way it was kind of a revolving door with who was playing, but just with the injuries. But I could definitely see them adding someone. It's just, it's not going to be, hopefully, not a high resource. But I do like Latimer because I feel like he didn't necessarily have all the opportunity in Denver, and he was a second-round pick. So, you know, there had to be something that teams absolutely loved about him coming out of school.
Absolutely. And, Christian, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. He was a second-round pick out of Indiana, and unfortunately for him, he had a lot of other wide receivers playing in front of him. And when you've got Emmanuel Sanders and you have Demaryius Thomas, it's not easy to break through. But, you know, with that being said, there were some injuries to the third and fourth wide receivers. And even with that, we didn't necessarily see him break through. But perhaps the Giants provide him an opportunity that Denver didn't. We'll have to wait and see how that comes to fruition. You still need options. You need competition. That never hurts.
Let's just put it this way. Because his wide receivers coach is here with the Giants, they obviously know a lot about him because the assistant coach does. Yeah. Look, the assistant coach is not going to put his neck on a line and tell his new employer that I think you should bring this guy over unless he really believes in him.
So some potential.
That's just logic.
No, I think that's a fair take.
All right? That's just pure logic. So you got to put your faith in his opinion, and obviously the Giants have certainly consulted him. I'm sure they have. I mean, I haven't talked to him, but I'm sure they have. And they're taking a leap of faith.
Well, and it's the same thing with Morrow and Martin in terms of
no
James
question.
Betcher, I'm sure, telling Dave Gettleman, I like how we've groomed these
and
guys
in
Arizona.
And this is what I can do with him.
And exactly. This is how I see him in the defense. And if you look at both of those players, progressively got more and more playing time, but we're not talking Pro Bowlers. We're not talking numbers and stats off the charts, but clearly potential and upside is there because of their age and the fact that they have familiarity with the systems that are going to be employed.
Just remember, it's the guys like Kevin Booth and Dave Tollefson who are incredibly valuable to those Giants winning seasons and Super Bowl teams. It's not always the headline free agent, okay, that makes the impact with the fans, but can make a lot of difference on the field.
Chase Blackburn would be another
Chase
player.
Chase Blackburn.
I would throw it to
those,
the mix as
those
well.
Guys, those second-level guys, those under-the-radar guys, to be a really terrific team, you got to have some of those guys. And the Giants were missing a lot last year. So the fact that they've gotten some of those guys now, that's a plus.
Let's head back to the phone lines. This is the turning point to the program. We don't have a sponsor, but I'm still going to call it the turning point to the program. It's where things go downhill, and that is Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, thanks so much for making time out of your busy schedule for us today.
Here we go. Hey, man, patience and prepared. That's what Gettleman has to be on draft day. Be patient.
Yeah.
Be prepared at that number two pick. And Lance, you're one of those. And I think you know which one you are.
I don't know if that's a compliment or a zing, but I'll take it anyway.
It is.
Yes.
It's both.
I didn't hear short as the third adjective being described.
That goes without saying. You don't even have to say that one. So at least Charlie's creative. He's expanding his vocabulary.
Hey, the thing that I have a problem with is, and we've got some time, but Gettleman created a hole where we didn't have one by letting DRC go. And I'm okay with that if he feels that he's older and blah, blah, blah. But we got to bring somebody in who is as good, if not better than him. And right now, our cornerback situation is pretty poor, considering we don't know what we're going to get from Apple. All you have is Jenkins, and we're going into the draft, and Gettleman said he wanted to go into the draft, not panicking and have to go and get a certain position. Well, right now, we're going to have to go into this draft and get cornerback.
Well, Charlie, hold on. Hold on, though, Charlie. It's only March. I would be very surprised, based on what I saw of Ross Cockrell, if he is not re-signed. In fact, I would be more than surprised. I'd be pretty shocked. He's a good player.
Well, if we leave him out there long enough, somebody's going to grab him before we do.
I haven't heard of him taking any visits, though, Charlie. Charlie, I've not heard of anybody taking visits with him, and usually when that happens, it's because the player and the team have some sort of understanding that we want you, you want to be here, we know the ballpark figure, but until we get our business done and our numbers working out with all these other guys we have to sign, we just need to kind of ask you to wait your turn. That's usually what happens in those kinds of situations with this type of player. So I would just hold your horses on that. I think it would be surprising if he is not re-signed. That's all I'm going
to
tell you.
Well, and here's what I'll add to it, Charlie. I don't disagree with you. I think DRC has a tremendous amount of value. And
I do,
Paul
too.
And I were on the day where he was let go, and we said that. And there's no hiding that. But, I mean, to your point, who's to say that the Giants may not target drafting a corner in the third or the fourth round?
There are a lot of them.
I don't think that's a stretch. So
sure.
Maybe they address that need in the draft, and they have added a few guys in free agency. A number of them are unproven commodities, but guys that have some familiarity with Gettleman or the coaching staff, and then they just bring in more guys to compete. But to Paul's point, if Ross Cockrell is re-signed, and you have Janoris Jenkins and Eli Apple, you know, returns to what he did his rookie year, and then you have some of these other guys compete, you at least have options. That doesn't mean that they're going to become DRC, but I don't think they're just sitting back, Charlie, and saying, well, DRC was let go, and we just have to all of a sudden keep our fingers crossed that things are going to pan out correctly.
Well, so, you know, sometimes GMs have blind spots. You know, Jerry Reese had a couple, and we know what they were. Mm-hmm. And Gettleman, I hope, doesn't have a blind spot at cornerback, because he did let, you know,
Josh Norman, correct, and he relied on the draft to make up for that.
Charlie, Dave Gettleman's brought in 9 players over the course of the last 2 weeks, either through trade or through free agency. I mean, you want to plug every single hole like yesterday. It's not that simple, you know? The guy has been the most active GM in the NFL during this offseason, and he's already brought in an entire van load of players, and here you are today saying, well, he still has a hole to fill.
Paul,
you got to relax.
Paul, can you blame him? Can you blame him? It's the slow part of lobster season, okay? I mean, what else there is in Maine? I mean, there's minor league baseball.
I mean, come on.
I
understand there's more time. There's more time. But let me tell you what I think is going to happen in the draft real quick.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be 4 quarterbacks taken, 1, 2, 3, 4. The Giants are going to move out, and I think they're going to go to Denver. They're going to swap with them, and I think the Browns at 4, the Bills are going to move up. So you're going to have 4 quarterbacks taken. We're
okay.
going to be at 5, and we're going to be able to take Barkley, Nelson, or Chubb. We're going to have the choice of those 3 players plus additional picks, which we're going to need to fill that cornerback spot.
So let me ask
that's
you this.
Charlie,
I got to ask
that'd be great.
Well,
no, that'd be great.
Oh, it would be ideal.
Charlie, if that happens, that's wonderful.
But here's where we have to bring some rationale into this conversation whenever Charlie is online. Okay, so let me get this straight.
He's got Barkley falling to 5.
Hold on. So the Browns are on the board at 4, okay? 3 quarterbacks were taken off the board, okay, including Cleveland taking one of the quarterbacks. So Cleveland's on the board at 4. Barkley's there, Nelson's there, Chubb's there. You're telling me John Dorsey is going to move down to 12 with Buffalo when all 3 of them are on the board and he has 2 of the top 5 picks. That's what you're selling to us right now. I just want to make sure that
he
we all
understand.
Is
well, he
Buffalo
can certainly
Bills
dream, but I just want to try to understand this. What happened?
They want a quarterback.
Buffalo wants a quarterback. Okay, I understand.
Denver wants a quarterback.
I understand Buffalo wants a quarterback, but if Cleveland already got its quarterback at one.
They're not taking another one at four.
They're not taking another one at four. So, and if Dorsey has options at great other positions, why is he going to be in a rush to move down when all the previous GMs did was move down and down and down and miss out on quality players?
Because he's going to get a ton load of picks, additional picks.
Yeah, but they got a ton of load of picks in previous drafts, is my point. And what has that done for
them?
Yeah,
but it's a different GM. He'll utilize the picks a lot better than the last GM.
Charlie, here's the point. I think what you're presenting is unrealistic, but it would certainly be very sweet for the Giants to have extra picks and to be able to get their pick at number five. That would be just, I mean, Dave Gettleman would probably jump so high that they'd have to put a hole in the roof.
Yes,
but that's not going to happen.
Hey, Lance, I just want to say one other thing. Magic is a lot better player than Jordan ever was.
I figured you were gonna slide that in, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call. If only we had more time on the program so that I could change the topic off of football and give him some knowledge.
We just found out that Charlie knows a lot about the NBA.
Oh,
and
really?
I appreciate that, Charlie. Thank you, because you're right.
Clearly, we have unbiased individuals.
Totally
in this conversation.
Unbiased.
Oh, absolutely. Let's head back to the lines. Don is in Knoxville. Don, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How are you
guys?
What's going on? Don, what's happening with you?
By the way, if someone would have told me that Charlie was on the phone ahead of me, I would have gone and grabbed an Advil.
I think the two of us could use an Advil as well.
Hey, come on. He's dreaming, man. He's dreaming, but it's a lot of fun.
Two questions. One for you, Lance, and one for Paul.
Yeah.
Let me start with the Paul question first. Paul, you and I last week had talked about the fact of acquiring additional draft picks.
Yes.
And Nelson is definitely my top guy to get drafted by the Giants. But here's the question. The Jets moved up to number three, and I'm wondering, was the Giant price too high that we couldn't have gotten all those draft picks that went to the Colts for moving up three spots?
A longtime NFL guy, personnel guy around the league mentioned to me it was his logical assumption, and I'm not telling you this is in the building because I did not talk to Dave Gettleman or Kevin Abrams about this, and certainly even if I did, I couldn't tell you. But it was this gentleman's logical assumption, his educated guess, that in order to get higher than three, it would have required next year's number one pick to be part of the package. And quite simply, the Jets trade with the Browns, or the Colts, I should say, involved a bunch of twos.
Just three.
They did not have to give up a number one next year as part of their deal. But based on past history, when teams try to get up to that high, next year's number one is usually part of the package. And this gentleman who's outside the building said to me, you could probably make a good bet that Cleveland and or the Giants, if those calls were made to them, they probably said, well, look, the standard is you're going to have to include next year's number one in the deal or we're not going to do it. And so my guess to you is when the Jets found a taker who was willing to get them into the top three without including next year's number one, they jumped at it. That would be my take.
I guess I was devastated to see how much was given away, and I know how badly we need those additional picks, especially since we're giving away the compensatory fourth and a seventh rounder.
Yeah, but here's the good news. You saw what the Jets gave up, right? And the Giants are two, which means your price now, by any logic, has to be more than what the Jets gave up, right? Your price just went up. Your price just went up. So if anybody rings the Giants' phone, Dave Gettleman has a great basis to stand on and says, well, look what the Jets gave up to get to number three. All right? You're starting there, and then you're raising the price because we're two. It's a beautiful thing. I think the Jet deal was a terrific deal for the Jets if they want their quarterback.
It was great value.
And it was a terrific deal for the Giants because it just enhanced the trade value of their pick.
No, I would agree with that. It just, as I said, it just blew me away. Second question, and I'll take it off the air, Lance. I'm with Jonathan Hankins back out on the free agent market. Do you think the Giants will try and reacquire him? Because he certainly was a good performer for the Giants. Guys, I thank you so much for taking my call today.
Don, appreciate the phone call. I've had a lot of Giants fans ask me also on social media once Hankins was let go, and I was very surprised that Hankins was let go. They have a new defensive coordinator, but they're going to a 4-3 where Jonathan Hankins started his career with Perry Fuel and Spags. So to say that the Colts got rid of Jonathan Hankins because of the scheme change does not add up. That, to me, was a financial decision. I know I saw Hankins has made a few visits. I believe it was reported that the Redskins was one of the teams that he visited with. I'm sure that's not necessarily going to make Giants fans happy. But, I mean, as far as the Giants are concerned, Hankins, he just came from a 3-4 defense with Indianapolis. So he can fit this system. But, I mean, Paul, Snacks is your nose tackle. So unless you think that Hankins is going to be your edge rusher there in that 3-4 defensive line set, you're certainly not putting him back as a linebacker. Does Hankins want to come into a role where he may not be a starter? And I don't think he's at the point in his career where he would accept that complimentary role. That's just my personal opinion. So if he wants to accept that type of a role and the Giants are interested, you know, then I think you've got a meeting halfway of the minds. If that's not the case, I think it may be a luxury that the Giants would be tough to afford and also maybe an opportunity that doesn't interest Jonathan Hankins at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. Makes perfect sense to me.
So, I mean, that's, I think, things that you got to take into consideration. But he, to me, is one of the surprises that was let go because I didn't think his contract was overwhelming, and the Colts certainly have not had a great deal of pass rushers or offensive linemen on their roster over the last few years. So that is going to wrap things up for us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are up and running each and every day the rest of this week at noon Eastern as we'll continue to go over the Giants' latest free agent signings as well as the news and notes surrounding the draft. There has certainly been a lot of activity since the start of the new league year, and we're only, what, about 2 weeks in. So I'm sure things are going to continue to heat up as we move forward. We appreciate all of you for tuning in. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.